Good morning. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. It's 10 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Monday, February the 12th.
This is the first time that I've ever been called a liar and a bigot and an anti-Semite. This has hurt me.
That was former President Jimmy Carter reacting to the reaction to his book, Palestine, Peace, Not Apartheid, in which he is critical of Israel building a security fence, the conditions that the Palestinians live under, and blames Israel's occupation of the West Bank and Gaza as the reason there is no peace in the region. Our guest this hour disagrees with President Carter's analysis as presented in Peace, Not Apartheid, and sent him a petition with more than 25,000 signatures protesting the book. We will talk with Rabbi Marvin Heyer, who is founder and dean of the Simon Wiesenthal Center, and we will welcome your thoughts and questions for him at 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890, 263-1890. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Let me welcome our guest. Rabbi Heyer joins us from Los Angeles. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks very much for joining us very early on the West Coast. Do you think President Jimmy Carter is a bigot, is an anti-Semite?
No. The Simon Wiesenthal Center has never made such charges. Let me say, in 1997, I introduced President Carter here in Los Angeles, an event, and I was present at the White House when President Carter presented the Congressional Gold Medal to Simon Wiesenthal, and never said that President Carter was an anti-Semite or a bigot. What I do say is that he's lost all perspective. He has written a book laying all of the blames for the Middle East conflict at Israel's doorsteps, and that is preposterous.
Yeah. Well, why is that preposterous?
I'll tell you why. Because everybody who is a student of Middle East politics knows there have been lots of mistakes on both sides. But one fundamental principle is easily discernible, and that is President Carter talks about the security fence that Israel has built. Israel has built this security fence only recently, in the last few years. Why wasn't this security fence built right after the 67 war? If Israel wanted to imprison all of the Palestinians and create difficulties for them economically, they should have put up the security fence immediately. Israel did not put such a security fence up because it knew it would create tremendous hardship on the Palestinian population. But it had no alternative once Hamas, Islamic Jihad, the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade, decided that their principal activity would be suicide attacks on buses, restaurants, theaters, schools, during Passover celebration, attacking hotels. So the Israeli government said there's no alternative. Our first responsibility is to protect our own citizens. We're going to have a security fence, and yes, sometimes that security fence will not exactly go to the 67th border. It'll have to curve and go into areas that offer proper security for the Israeli population. Had there been no attacks, had there been no suicide campaign, there never would have been a security fence. Israel didn't do it right after 67. It only did it recently, and there never would have been a security fence if not for those attacks. That's what President Carter never says.
Yeah, he calls it a wall, I believe. The Israel's wall has choked off the Palestinian economy and is worse.
I would agree that it's very difficult. I only would describe it that I wish Israel would have, instead of calling it a security fence, I would call it the Hamas wall. Because if there would have been no Hamas suicide attacks, there'd be no wall, no security fence.
Yeah. Has this, though, made the region worse than South Africa's under the apartheid system?
Oh, nonsense. No way. Any comparisons to South Africa apartheid system is just really, and Jimmy Carter knows it. He has been, as you know, some 14 members of the Carter Center resigned. Mm-hmm. One of his chief political aides all these years since he left office, Kenneth Stein, resigned. He has been former United States ambassadors to Israel and to the Middle East have criticized the plan because it loses perspective. If you want to say, look, both sides have made errors, that is a legitimate position. But to blame only Israel is a biased account, unworthy of Jimmy Carter, and he deserves all the criticism he's getting.
Yeah, what's wrong with saying that Israel's occupation of the West Bank and Gaza is the biggest reason there's no peace in the region?
Because Israel withdrew from the Sinai when it had a peace partner. Ariel Sharon said he would withdraw from 95% of the West Bank. There was a peace partner. Ehud Olmert reiterated it. Even 6 weeks ago, he said the withdrawal from Gaza would not be our last withdrawal. We were willing to withdraw from the large portions of the West Bank. But we have to have a peace partner, not Hamas, that refuses to recognize Israel. Even now, says they will never their spokesman, quoted in the New York Times, said, for us, Israel doesn't exist, not in reality and not even in fantasy. How could you make peace with such a government?
Let me, Rabbi Heyer, get your reaction to Jimmy Carter's handwritten note to you, which I see here, to Rabbi Heyer. I don't believe that Simon Wiesenthal would have resorted to falsehood and slander to raise funds. It's Jimmy Carter reacting to the petition you sent him.
Right. First of all, let me say this. When he talks about funds, in order to every time we communicate with our members, if you look on the website, there's always a button that says, would you like to be a member of the Simon Wiesenthal Center? Please click here. Now, for President Carter to say that the petition campaign was about fundraising is also really unfair, below the belt. And you'll notice in my reply to President Carter, I did not address the fundraising. I could have. I could have said to President Carter, you're one of the greatest fundraisers in the Arab world in the history of fundraising. Yeah. I never said that.
Tell us what you did say to him.
I said to President Carter that I recognize his historic achievements, that he was instrumental in bringing peace between Israel and Egypt. I do not believe that Israel is infallible. The government of Israel, like all governments, have made serious foreign policy mistakes, as all human beings, because we're all fallible. But it is completely preposterous to blame Israel when Israel put that security fence up in reaction to consistent suicide attacks from Hamas, Islamic Jihad, and the Al-Aqsa Brigades. And I also said to him, I've been the closest to Simon Wiesenthal for 30 years. I knew him more than anyone else, worked with him closely. Simon Wiesenthal told me dozens of times there would long have been peace in the Middle East if the Arabs refused to listen to their extremist leaders, sought moderation as a course, compromise like Sadat. Sadat made a peace deal with Israel. He was assassinated by the extremists. And if they would have leaders that, not like Arafat, President Carter does not acknowledge in his book what President Clinton says. And, you know, and I was amazed that President Carter does not accept that as fact. President Clinton said in 2000, when Barack offered 95% of the West Bank and Gaza, he offered East Jerusalem $30 billion. Arafat didn't even have a counteroffer. He rejected Barack's offer, went back and started the Intifada. And President Clinton was asked, who's at fault for the failure of the Camp David to reach accords in 2000? And President Clinton said, Yasser Arafat. is at fault. Mm. President Carter ignores all of that.
Yeah, so what do you want? What was the point of sending this petition to him and speaking out and protesting this book? What do you want to see happen?
Well, what we want to see happen is that we want President Carter to be put on notice that he has made a serious error in this book, and that it's sort of a biased account of the history of the Middle East, blaming Israel when he knows that Israel has extended itself. Israel made peace with, look, there's a cold peace with Syria, but there's never been any attacks on the Golan Heights. Since Israel and Syria, more or less have a tacit understanding. Israel withdrew from Sinai. Israel would have given the Palestinians almost everything they want. They ask in return for one thing, a government that is not extremist, that would recognize Israel. That is not what they have in Hamas.
We're talking with Rabbi Marvin Heyer, founder and dean of the Simon Wiesenthal Center. The rabbi sent President Jimmy Carter a petition recently containing more than 25,000 signatures protesting the claims in President Carter's book, Palestine, Peace, Not Apartheid. We're talking about why our guest and many others are upset with what Jimmy Carter had to say in that book, and welcoming your thoughts and questions at 1-800-642-1234. In Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine, hoping you'll stay tuned. Ben Marins is with you between 4 and 6. The Great Decision Series continues after 5 this afternoon with Ben and his guest talking about immigration reform. That's coming up after 5 o'clock. Our guest this hour is Rabbi Marvin Heyer, founder and dean of the Simon Wiesenthal Center. The Simon Wiesenthal Center sent this to President Carter, this petition. Dear President Carter, we respect your historic achievement in forging peace between Egypt and Israel in 1979, which only deepens our disappointment and concern over your one-sided book, Palestine, Peace, Not Apartheid. President Carter, there is no Israeli apartheid policy, and you know it. I join with the Simon Wiesenthal Center in respectfully reminding you that the only reason there is no peace in the Holy Land is because of Palestinian terrorism and fanaticism. 1-800-642-1234 in Madison, 263-1890. Rick and Phillips is our first caller. Hi, Rick.
Good morning to the good rabbi. I'd just like to make an initial comment before I explain really what my point of view is here. I think the good rabbi is perhaps being a little bit too easy on President Carter because of President Carter's pulling out the props under the Shah of Iran. We got that Ayatollah Khomeini taken over, one of the most powerful countries in that part of the world, and we've had nothing but trouble ever since then. But that isn't really my primary comment. My primary comment is that I've listened to public radio now for a good many years, and it seems to me there's an increasing tendency of the ultra-left, they like to call themselves progressive intellectuals from our universities, people kind of that follow Noam Chomsky and from him all the way down to much lesser-known figures. And so many of these ultra-left-wing professors, whenever they talk on public radio and it concerns Israel, they have this analysis that America is the most dangerous colonialist power the world has ever seen, and Israel is just merely an outpost of the American colonialist hegemony, and whenever Israel does something, it's because it's in the interest of the United States, and that's why that entire part of the world is so unstable and so violent. And of course, whenever Israel feels the need to attack because it's had these missiles being launched from foreign countries and landing on their school playgrounds, and they get ammunition to replete their reserves in the United States, then they point at that and say, see, that's the connection here, that All this trouble in the Middle East is stirred up by America, with Israel just as our proxy. And I just think this is terribly unfair to the Israeli people. I mean, no government is perfect. No people are perfect. Everybody makes all kinds of glaring mistakes. But if Israel makes a really serious mistake, they're going to cease to exist in that part of the world. And I've been a supporter of Israel all my life, although I'm a Christian. I've sent several thousands of dollars of cash money to help support Israel over the years, especially when they were really pressed, such as during the wars in the 60s and the 70s. And I think this is a growing threat at these elite universities like Harvard and Yale and Columbia.
Rick, I want to be able to get our guest in on this, but why are you sending money and a big supporter of Israel?
Well, I've done this in the past when they were really, really hard-pressed by some of these wars, like the 67 war, for instance, and the difficulties they've had in the 70s. I don't have the kind of funds now, so I can't do that anymore. But, I'm not any kind of a religious fanatic one way or another, but I think it would be a dreadful thing if the state of Israel was wiped off the face of the map. And they've got terrible difficulties with the terrorists in these that are given havens to hide in these surrounding countries and attack Israeli civilians with these rockets and bombs and other such things.
All right, let me get Rabbi Heyer to react to your comments.
Well, first I would say that everybody's entitled to their point of view, and that includes, of course, intellectuals and progressives. But one thing should be pointed out, that mistakes have been made throughout history, and intellectuals have to share in major mistakes. For example, during the Second World War, intellectuals urged Chamberlain to make peace with Hitler. George Bernard Shaw, the editors of the Times of London, which was then the newspaper of record, said that the only way out of this conflict is to make peace with Hitler, no matter what the cost is. Of course, that was a disaster. That cost Europe and cost the world 50 million lives. So, nobody has the crystal ball. And when intellectuals say that they have the crystal ball on what the future is like, we should not believe them. But human beings can make mistakes, and that includes intellectuals. They have a right to their point of view, but they're not always right, as history has shown us.
Kathleen Dunn interviewed former President Carter about his book on Wisconsin Public Radio in December, and I'd like you, Rabbi Heyer, to react to this portion of that interview.
We are raised to honor Israel and to believe that Israel or Israelites or Hebrews or, were chosen people of God and that our Savior Jesus Christ came from among them and so forth. So there's a natural tendency in this country for American citizens to give support for the security of Israel. That's the bottom line. On top of that, though, as you say, the American-Israeli Political Action Committee is a formidable factor in this country. It was founded when President Eisenhower was in office about 50 years ago, and it has grown into the most effective lobbying group that I have known in my own political experience. I'm not criticizing them. They have a perfect right to exist and to do what they're doing and do it extremely well. But their purpose is not to promote peace in the Middle East. Their official purpose is to take whatever policies the Israeli government has and to promote those policies in this country and to try to secure American support for the Israeli government at that time.
Rabbi Heyer?
Yeah. First, let me say this. That to say that AIPAC is an arm of the Israeli government is absolutely unfair. AIPAC are a group of dedicated American citizens, very concerned about the United States foreign policy and to make sure that the United States foreign policy remains strong and dedicated to fight terrorism and fanaticism. And none of the people in AIPAC would ever compromise the United States of America, which is our country. But they have every right as American citizens to say that American foreign policy is best served when you stand up to terrorists and fanatics. It is least served when you turn the other cheek on them. Now, look what's happening in the world today. I mean, we have a world today where we're in danger when technology makes further improvements and gets into the hands of the terrorists. 9/11 and the terrorist planned attack of blowing up 10 airliners over the Atlantic will look like kid stuff in the future. If we do not get to the heart of this issue, what is driving this fanaticism and extremism? Now, you can't say, oh, you know why? It's their point of view. If you don't give in to them, they say they want all of this land and they want that land. We have to defeat terrorism and fanaticism. They are the greatest danger in the 21st century. So when AIPAC says that, you know, United States foreign policy should remain strong in the fight against terrorism, they're doing what is best for the United States of America, not for the state of Israel.
Let me bring in another caller, Joe in Madison. Hello, Joe.
Hey, good morning. You know, I find it really ironic that the rabbi is speaking of freedom and fighting terrorism, and the fanaticism is the biggest problem, because I completely agree with him. Now, that said, here's the issue. Israel was founded on terrorism. Menachem Begin and his boys pulled a lot of terrorist stunts that we would now call, you know, terrorism. That's not necessarily a bad thing. It's just a fact. What we really ought to be doing is opening up the dialogue. It strikes me as ironic that it seems that the rabbi wants to shut down the dialogue. Why would you protest a book? Why wouldn't you write another one? Why wouldn't you come out with a rational argument stating fact by fact why it's wrong instead of protesting it, which is basically a form of censorship? I don't understand.
Yeah, Rabbi Meyer.
Well, first let me say this, that of course protesting is an act of freedom of expression. That's what President Carter does every day when it comes to the Bush administration. He hasn't written a book on Iraq. He spends his time criticizing the president, which is his right. That's what we're doing. We're criticizing President Carter for a one-sided account of the history of the Middle East. And let me say about Menachem Begin. Menachem Begin was previously head of the Irgun before the State of Israel was formed. Later, when Ben-Gurion put it to him and he said, Mr. Begin, can only be one army. If there's going to be two armies, there's going to be a civil war because we're not going to let you have your army. Menachem Begin thought about it. He hung up the spikes and became a member of the parliament and sought democracy as his path through government. He won the Nobel Peace Prize. Now, that is not what Hamas does. That is not what Yasser Arafat is doing. That is not, of course, what the Iranians are doing. And as long as you have fanaticism, you're not going to have peace in the Middle East.
We did also, a couple weeks ago, Jimmy Carter spoke before Brandeis University. He stood by his naming the book Peace, Not Apartheid. He said that he was deliberately trying to be provocative with that title. But he did apologize for one paragraph that in the book on page 213. Let's hear what he had to say about that.
That sentence was worded in a completely improper and stupid way, and I have written my publishers to change that sentence immediately.
Oh, I thought it actually said the sentence. I'm sorry, but it was in a way it was worded in such that it sounded like the bombings by suicide bombers would stop once Israel gave up territory. Rabbi, what was your reaction to the president's apology?
Oh, I think he was right to apologize for that. He should apologize for a lot more in the book. His one-sidedness of blaming Israel, his reference to the Jewish community in the United States, where he says here in Israel there's criticism on what happens on what the government does, but the United States, he says, because of powerful political, economic, and religious influences. Now, that is inappropriate for a former president. What does he mean, powerful? Does he mean powerful political, economic, and religious in an illegal sense, that we control, Jews control all the power, all the political might in the country. That would be very unfair. It's a poor way of writing. He should have apologized for that paragraph as well.
Next is Linda in Monroe. Hello, Linda.
Good morning, Joy. Good morning, Rabbi Heyer. Now, I don't agree with your guest. Now, I read Jimmy Carter's book, which still rates in the top 10. Now, he more or less said in his book that the way to Baghdad is through Israel, and I agree with him, and some of the Israelis even agree with that point of view. Now, due to the fact that he was president, he knows what's going on over there in Lebanon, and Israel has land that belongs to Lebanon, and some of that they're putting fences on that even the UN disagrees with. Now, I feel the issue is so serious that I wouldn't even mind seeing him run for president again, and he even won the Nobel Peace Prize. And please comment.
Well, first of all, Shimon Peres also won the Nobel Peace Prize and has been Ben-Gurion's secretary, and Shimon Peres couldn't disagree with Jimmy Carter more about how to achieve peace. Secondly, let me say, and this is very important, Israel has withdrawn from Lebanon enough to satisfy the United Nations. Yet in Lebanon, Israel got Hezbollah. Hezbollah attacked Israel, started the Lebanese war. Who is Hezbollah? Another one of these fanatic groups, like Hamas, Al-Aqsa Brigades, Islamic Jihad. As long as you have these extremist groups, and as long as the moderates remain in the background and let them run their affairs, you're not going to have peace in the Middle East.
Thank you, Linda. Now we go to Louise in Spring Green. Hello.
Good morning. Good morning, Rabbi. There's been a lot of talk about the Nobel Peace Prize and the Oslo Accord that they won their prize for, Mr. Begin being one of them. And for that peace prize it was because they agreed to, both parties agreed to the 1967 borders as established by UN Resolution 242. My question to the good Rabbi is, if the Israeli government has agreed to the 1967 borders, why is the wall, which you can call the wall whatever you'd like, but, and I don't disagree with your need or felt emotional need to have protection, why is it built on Palestinian land outside of those 1967 borders? I will hang up and listen on the radio for the response.
Yes, the response is very simple, because in the areas where the security fence is built, it takes into consideration communities from which the violence has come from. In other words, supposing you have an area where one side of that area has been quiet, but the other side is infested with many terrorist groups from which attacks have been launched. So the Israelis have put the security border, the security fence, in the area in order to thwart terrorist attacks. In addition, Israel has said, when there is a peace agreement, this is a temporary wall. It is not an attempt to create a permanent border. Israel has said this dozens of times. When the Palestinians are transparent and they elect a government not made up of terrorists, not made up of a government that says, like Hamas, we don't accept Israel as a reality. We don't even fantasize of the existence of Israel. Can you imagine any country in the world having that as a peace partner? It's preposterous. It's amazing that Israel has been as liberal as it has, considering that the Palestinians have given them Hamas.
We will go now to Al. Oops. Now we go to Al in Milwaukee. Hello.
Morning. Simon Wiesenthal was a very decent person. He was, if you will, a mensch. Now, I remember the Kurt Waldheim affair. These same attack dogs that are nipping at Jimmy Carter's ankles went after Kurt Waldheim. Simon Wiesenthal issued a strong statement of support for Kurt Waldheim, and I think if he were alive today, he'd issue a strong statement of support for Jimmy Carter. My main question to you is that you've known Simon Wiesenthal so long. Why is it that he issued that strong support of Kurt Waldheim? And I'll take the answer off the air.
First of all, sir, you have it wrong. Simon Wiesenthal never issued a support for Kurt Waldheim. What Simon Wiesenthal said you can't accuse a person of war crimes if you can't prove it. He said Kurt Waldheim was a notorious liar who covered up his past, never told anyone that he was a former Nazi official, an officer. He hid his entire account of what happened in World War II and became Secretary General of the United Nations. Simon Wiesenthal was greatly embarrassed by that. But he said, that doesn't give anyone the right to call Kurt Waldheim a war criminal unless you can prove it. And if you can't prove it, you shouldn't say he's a war criminal. You should say he's a liar, that he has violated the trust of the people to be Secretary General of the United Nations. That was Mr. Wiesenthal's position.
Yeah, and what do you speculate he would say to President Carter about his book?
Oh, I think he would be horrified, because he said many, many times the reason there is no peace in the Middle East is because of Islamic fundamentalism and extremism. He said, take away the extremists and give us more Sadats, and you'd have peace immediately.
We're going to take a short pause and then continue talking with Rabbi Marvin Heyer, founder and dean of the Simon Wiesenthal Center, talking about the controversy over former President Jimmy Carter's book, Palestine, Peace, Not Apartheid. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, in Madison, 263-1890. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. Kathleen Dunn is with you after 9 o'clock. A little later this morning, after 10, Kathleen and her guest will celebrate the birthday of Abraham Lincoln. She'll talk with a couple of presidential historians coming up after 10 o'clock. We're talking about the outrage over President Jimmy Carter's book by people in the Jewish community and others, saying that Carter is wrong in his assessment, saying that there's no peace in the region because Israel occupies the West Bank and Gaza, and how President Clinton says that the security fence or wall that Israel built has choked off the Palestinian economy and has led to conditions similar to the apartheid system in South Africa. Our guest this hour is the founder and dean of the Simon Wiesenthal Center in Los Angeles, Rabbi Marvin Heyer, sent off a petition to Carter with more than 25,000 signatures protesting the allegations in the book. Our next caller is Bob in Wauwatosa. Hi, Bob. You're on the air.
Good morning. How are you?
Very good.
I did have the opportunity to read the Carter book, and it disturbs me in the use of apartheid, because what Carter really means is genocide, because the Palestinian leaders want to not only eliminate the state of Israel, but they view Jewish people as subhuman. And if you don't believe their rhetoric, it's the same rhetoric that's been used throughout the world to get rid of people. And I think they mean what they say. And it also concerns me, if you look at the apartheid system, the goal of the South African non-whites was to join the South African white society or join a multiracial society. That is not the goal of the Palestinians. Their leaders, their position is to eliminate from the Middle East not only a Jewish state, but a large Jewish presence, like the other Arab countries have gotten rid of all the Jews out of Tunisia, out of Yemen, out of Iraq. That is simply the goal. And for Carter suddenly, 25 years after his Nobel Peace Prize, to realize that he was wrong in his conclusions back then, and suddenly it's all Israel's fault, I think the problem is that, quite frankly, he misinterprets facts, history, and doesn't use logic. I think he's a well-meaning person, but a well-meaning people can often cause damage with their problems.
Rabbi Heyer?
I would agree. And I say again, I reiterate in the past, that there long would have been peace in the Middle East if it wouldn't be for the propensity of Palestinians to elect extremist leaders, fanatics, who, for example, many of the Hamas leaders have a greater adherence. They think that the next world is a lot better than this one. And the, when they pursue martyrdom operations, they believe that they're going to be at God's table by doing these acts. And when you have leaders who believe in that way, it's very difficult to find moderation, compromise, and peace.
Thank you, Bob. Marcus in Madison is with us now. Hello, Marcus.
Good morning, Ms. Cardine and Rabbi Heyer. Rabbi Heyer, a question, please. Maybe you could explain this to me. This is a quotation from David Ben-Gurion from 1951, published in Haaretz. He said, "Strengthening Israel helps the Western powers to maintain equilibrium and stability in the Middle East. Israel is to become the watchdog. There is no fear that Israel will undertake any aggressive policy towards the Arab states when this would explicitly contradict the wishes of the U.S. and Britain. But if for any reason the Western powers should sometimes prefer to close their eyes, Israel could be relied upon to punish one or several neighboring states whose discourtesy towards the West went beyond the bounds of the permissible." Now, I read this as an admission by one of the Israeli settler states' own ideologues that it is a bulwark for imperialist economic and military ambitions in the region. Could that be why this tiny state of, what, 5.5 million people is the biggest recipient of U.S. military aid in the world, has nuclear capabilities, F-16 fighter jets, helicopter gunships, tanks, and virtually limitless weapons for not only the use against Palestinian communities, but attempts to invade and steal territory from Syria, Lebanon, Egypt, Jordan, and to pummel Lebanon? Could you respond to this, please?
Oh, absolutely, and with great delight. First, let me tell you that if you look today in Haaretz.com, the JerusalemPost.com, the Israeli newspapers, take a look at the headlines. The headlines are: Arab members of the Israeli Knesset outraged at a dig that is going on, which they say will endanger the Al-Aqsa Mosque. They are speaking with their authority as members of the Israeli Knesset. Have you ever heard of a Jew being a member of a parliament in any of the Arab states? Can you ever turn on, let's go to the dot-coms in the Arab world today to see what the leading Jewish spokesman has to say in Saudi Arabia, in Lebanon, in Iraq, in Iran, in any of the Arab states? It's non-existent because they don't have such rights. Minorities are not encouraged to be members of parliament in that state because what you have is fanaticism, dictatorships. But in a democracy like Israel, an Arab is elected to the Knesset and can criticize the government every day without any penalties, without any punitive damages or fear. So Israel is like the United States in the sense that Israel is a free democracy. Israel is an oasis in the Middle East because there are none like it there. In most of the other countries in the Middle East, it's a one-way rule, except in Israel where you have a multi-party system and everyone is free to criticize and demonstrate, which is their right. So yes, there is something that Israel has learned from the United States, and that is a political system of freedom and democracy where criticism is allowed, and that's great.
I would like, Rabbi Heyer, for you to respond to this defense of former President Jimmy Carter that was written by a woman who served as the former education minister under Prime Minister Yitzhak Rabin. Her name, I believe, was Shulamit Aloni.
Oh, yes, Shulamit Aloni, yes.
And this was pointed out to me by John Nichols, who's the associate editor of the Capital Times newspaper in Madison. He's also a correspondent for The Nation magazine. And he says that she says, "Indeed, apartheid does exist here. The U.S. Jewish establishment's onslaught on former President Jimmy Carter is based on him daring to tell the truth, which is known to all. Through its army, the government of Israel practices a brutal form of apartheid in the territory it occupies. Its army has turned every Palestinian village and town into a fenced-in or blocked-in detention camp. All of this is done in order to keep an eye on the population's movements and to make its life difficult. Israel has even imposed a total curfew whenever the settlers who have illegally usurped the Palestinians' land celebrate their holidays or conduct their parades."
First of all, let me say that Shulamit Aloni, she is entitled to her point of view. She says that it's very difficult for the Palestinians as a result of security fence. I don't think anybody who has visited Israel and looks at the security fence will disagree that this makes things a lot more difficult for the Palestinians. It's their own fault. They're the ones who are supporting a terrorist government. They elected Hamas. What would happen if our neighbors, Canada and Mexico, were not free societies, but were dictatorships, encouraged terrorist attacks against the United States every day, schools, theaters, restaurants, buses? The United States would put up a security fence. And it would be very tough for our neighbors. We wouldn't deny that. But the fundamental issue is, why was the security fence put up only in the last few years? Because in the last few years, the principal tactic of the Palestinians has been terrorism against innocent civilians. And Israel said, we have a fundamental right to protect our citizens. And if that means putting the pressure on the Palestinians and thwarting the terrorist attacks, which it has done, so be it. Then that is a decision that most Western free democratic societies would also take given similar circumstances.
Ernie in Hayward is with us now. Hello, you're on the air.
Oh, I would agree with your guest that Israel has a good democracy, even better than ours with their proportional democracy. But what I called to say was that the United States contributes a more financial support to the, all parties in the Middle East than listeners do to Wisconsin Public Radio. And what I'm wondering is, would there be a tiny incentive for dialogue if the United States would eliminate these contributions of financial support? I know money talks, but people have got to start talking. And I think Jimmy Carter is a champion of dialogue.
Well, let me say this. First of all, I think the United States investment in the Middle East to $2 billion to Egypt, and I believe $3 billion to Israel, is a good investment. It's important. If you look at that region, it's important to the world because, unfortunately, we have not found yet an alternative to oil. And we're in the Western societies, we use up more oil than ever before. And if you look at the map and you see the precarious nature of the fact that there are few democracies, few islands where the United States could say, you know what, if push came to shove, there is a country that we can rely on, that has stability, that has a system in place of freedom, where if you disagree with the government, you don't like the prime minister, you could say it 100 times a day. You could demonstrate against them. You can't do that in all the other societies there. So the United States is making a strategic investment that serves the United States, not only Israel and Egypt.
Thank you, Ernie. Amy in Madison is with us now. Hello.
Hello. I'd like to say a few things. One is that the Jewish community is not a monolithic community, and there are many of us, I am Jewish, who totally disagree with what the rabbi is saying and do support the Palestinians' right to their own state. And it's simply wrong to keep referring to the Jewish community because there are a lot of Jews who support what Jimmy Carter has done in his book. As we speak, the Israelis are expanding settlements in the West Bank on Palestinian land. There is Exhibit A for showing that the Israelis do not operate in good faith when it comes to this business about following the roadmap. They're the ones that keep encroaching on Palestinian land, and they're creating very angry people that Israelis now call terrorists. And there is evidence that Israel has created an apartheid state. If you go to the West Bank, there are a lot of roads there that are Jewish-only roads. If you're not Jewish, you're not allowed to use the road. That's an example of apartheid. It's the occupation that is the cause of violence. It's the occupation that is the cause of the anger on the part of the Palestinians. And finally, the Israelis, lots of Israelis are critical of their own government policies toward the Palestinians, including the use of collective punishment. But in the United States, if people criticize Israel, groups like AIPAC try to suppress that dialogue and refer to people either as anti-Semites or self-hating Jews. So I do think that Carter has done a great service with his book, and it should create more discussion of what's going on there. What we've had in the United States in the mainstream media is a very one-sided view of Israel right or wrong. And it's simply not the case. Israel is oppressing the Palestinians and are causing the problems that they now complain of.
Well, first let me respond to that by saying it's amazing that this caller has left out one very embarrassing point of view, a fact, from her point of view, and that is those people who resigned from Jimmy Carter's, from the Carter Center, were all liberal Jews. None of them were Jews that believe in settlements. I don't believe in settlements, that basically that Israel should not withdraw automatically from any settlements in the West Bank. That would be preposterous. But all the people who resigned from the Carter Presidential Library and who were members of his team, who helped him forge his policies after he left the White House, were all liberal Jews. They were all against the policies that would say no withdrawal from the West Bank. And they said, this is unfair what President Carter said. The overwhelming majority of Jews would disagree with President Carter's conclusion, which is why they resigned. The people who resigned were not members of AIPAC. And the other thing I would like to say that the caller said was that the fence causes hardship and roads. Yes, I admitted that and said so many times in the interview today. Unfortunately, Israel put up the security fence in the last few years because it could no longer tolerate the fact that the principal policy of the Hamas and the Palestinians were not to attack soldiers, but to attack innocent civilians on a daily basis, women and children, in suicide attacks, and that every country in the world facing similar circumstances would do exactly what Israel is doing.
Rabbi, I have to jump in because we're at the very end of the hour. Thank you so very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Rabbi Marvin Heyer, founder and dean of the Simon Wiesenthal Center. Thanks to Cheryl Gasser for producing the hour and to Leo Duran for on-air production. Thank you for listening and for calling in. I'm Joy Cardine. I hope you stay tuned. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.